April 5th, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the new podcast series that's, I guess, not so new anymore. I'm your host, Downtown Donnie Brown, and I'm coming to you from my beautiful home in Banting Park. You'll be enjoying my grand piano later there, as you can see. And I'm joined, as always, by my extraordinary producer, the mighty Max Martinson, down there at the WUK studios in Radio Park on Victory Drive. And joining Max from the studio, my guest, an old friend that we used to share. We were in the same batting order on Saturday mornings when I was doing radio. Excuse me. This, of course, is the immortal James Santel of, excuse me, Amicus, a law review. And this is a great opportunity for Jim and I to catch up. Jim, how are you today?
I am doing well, especially since, Don, I get to reunite with you. As you said, it's been much too long. I continue to enjoy our partnership through Civic Media, but especially enjoyed, I won't refer to them as the good old days, but just the recent past days when you and I were quite literally back to back on Saturday mornings. Right?
So, this, of course, is a real treat for me, and I believe it will be for our listeners, as Jim's one of the top legal minds we have here in the state, if not the whole country, retired U.S. attorney, and again, host of a Amicus Law Review that had just finished up. It's every Saturday from 9 to 11. So those of you who are new to Civic Media and are interested in developing laws, please be sure to check out Jim's show every week so you can be caught up on what's going on. And Jim's here to talk about, well, a number of things, but we're glad that the election's finally over so we can start and talk about some of the exciting rites of spring, baseball season taking place, and softball season. I'm a softball dad. The Final Four takes place today.
Yep.
And so many other things to look forward to. Warmer temperatures. We're all united in that hope. And real quick, too, I want to congratulate the Waukesha South Blackshirt softball team on their winning their home opener over Milwaukee Reagan 15-10. Congrats to second-year coach Mario Nudi, who's really turned that program around, and his young team of tough, gritty young women who overcame a nearly an early six-run deficit with a five-run third inning. They took the lead in the fourth and never looked back. Big shout-out to first base Addie Kaiser, who went 5-for-5 at the plate. Pitcher Deanna Sanchez went 4-from-5 at the plate, and then had 7 strikeouts on the hill. And it was a real team effort that included 3 freshmen in the starting lineup, including catcher Kiara Brown, full disclosure, my daughter, third base Kara Moeller, and right fielder Charlie Benfield. So congrats again. We're looking forward to seeing more exciting things from a program that 2 years ago, or last season, in his first year, Coach Nudy's goal was to have at least one game of the season that was not a run roll. And that year they won like 5 or 6 games, and this year they're – looks like they're on their way to doing even better. So, but we must return to the election results, and that's why Jim is here. And before we talk about the local, we have to talk about the state election, and with Susan Crawford defeating Waukesha's own Brad Schimmel in what many call a very decisive victory, especially when you consider the large contributions made from Elon Musk and other people from the right. And what I wanted to really focus in on is Brad Schimmel's earned a lot of respect at the local level here in Waukesha, at least in his concession speech, when he immediately halted shouts from his supporters saying that the election was fixed or that Crawford's campaign cheated. And it's really an embrace to our traditions of honoring election results and the succession of our leaders and our elected positions and really all the good things. And Jim, I wanted your spin on that, if that was in earnest or what Schimmel's play may have been there, if it's not a noble one, which I believe it was.
I believe so too, Donna. I think you've got it spot on there. I have known Brad Schimmel since the time that I was an assistant U.S. attorney, then U.S. attorney. He was a district attorney, of course, in Waukesha. So we had a lot of interaction, less so more recently. But he continues to be a professional colleague of mine, and I'd like to think a friend. we are not necessarily politically allied and have not pursued that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't in any way prevent me, or in frankly, just the opposite. I do want to also acknowledge, as you have appropriately done, Don, the grace, the spirit, the message of his speech, not only decisively saying, no, we're going to accept this. He said, it didn't turn out the way we wanted to. And that's exactly right. You can express that. But what an important, I would say, a civics lesson for all of us in America. As we come through now, it's years now since we have been hearing about how elections are the products of fraud at the macro level, at the micro level. And to hear someone who has lost the election come forward and say, no, there may have been some who knows, if there are small irregularities, it would not have made a difference here. But beyond that, we are not going to go down the road of suggesting fraud. It simply doesn't happen in America, at least not with anywhere near the numbers we're talking. And I think all of us, regardless of your political bent, should look at that speech and say, in brief, but nonetheless, look at it and say, this is how we need to act. And I hope that the people who were there in his crowd that night, obviously people supporters, and everyone who are not his supporters, look at that and do exactly what you just did, Don, which is to say, yes, indeed, we commend that. That's the message of our American tradition. Let's do more of that going forward. Yeah. And let's not continue to perpetuate for your children, for future generations, this notion that somehow all of this is smoke and mirrors. It is not.
Right. And I wonder, too, and I'm surprised there wasn't more discussion about this, but there is a well-known rift between the Trump people and the Walker people that goes back to the last gubernatorial election. If you remember, I believe it was Rebecca Clefish lost the primary to someone that Trump was backing. That was out of, I forget the candidate's name now, but that had also resonated in other elections. And Schimmel, who was Walker's attorney general, if I have that correctly, I would believe is still a member of that camp. And obviously there's some real local support. And I wonder, where that came into play. President Trump ended up doing an endorsement for Brad Schimmel along with Elon Musk's money. And I guess fences were mended, but it begs the question if there's maybe a sense of reluctance on Schimmel's candidacy in this, knowing the new politics today. Right. What are your thoughts on that?
Exactly. And at a minimum, as he is thinking, I believe I am convinced that when Brad was taking the podium there, taking the dais, he intended to convey that message. Perhaps a secondary issue of his may have been, I don't need to be allied to the president's past history, saying that everything is, or many things, are the result of fraud, not only because it's not right to do it, that's number one, but second, there's not an alliance, there's not allegiance there. And again, good for Judge Schimmel, Brad Schimmel, former DA Judge Schimmel, to do just that. Whatever the motivation was, it was the right message. We needed to hear it. And good for it to come out of Wisconsin too, right? Have these narrow margins of elections. I hope everybody, Democrat and Republican alike, this is not to say, of course, Don, that if you've got a close race, if in Wisconsin you're down to even a couple hundred votes, you want a recount? Sure, you can do that. But under other circumstances, no. Let's acknowledge it. Yeah. Let's move on and embrace our system, which is what Brad Schimmel did.
Sure. Yeah, one final comment on the Supreme Court race, if you'll indulge me, is some of the other media spinsters from both sides had said that the Crawford strategy had employed a lot of the same kind of ugliness, if you will, in terms of smearing the other candidate that that the GOP or the right or Wiss Red has been known for, and that in all that noise of kind of bashing the two candidates being bashed from the opposite sides, that it was difficult for candidates to really see, okay, who's the, who's the real perpetrator here, who's less worthy, and maybe that compelled them to vote on maybe some of those single issues like the 1849 law or women's issues that concern both men and women alike. voting in Wisconsin and the kind of care we want to provide for our women, health care, that is.
I think you've hit upon something, too, which goes more broadly, and we've seen this in so many elections, to the ways in which we campaign. You began our conversation, Don, by talking about this particular instance where obviously Judge, both of them, frankly, I've seen materials in both directions. A particular case is resolved in a particular way, and look at this. We can't possibly have a Supreme Court justice who handled this criminal case in this way. This is outrageous.
Yeah.
There are problems with that. Number one, chances are when you delve into the specifics, as you just did in part, you find that it's not quite as black and white, as bright line as you might think, and that there are reasons for judgments. And knowing, too, that sentencings and the decisions that judges make, they're all discretionary. They're judgment. That's the reason why we want human beings there. So number one, I've never liked that on either side. When someone picks up something that a singular case that a lawyer has represented a client in, where there is a defendant, where there's a civil piece of litigation, and say, see, this tells us everything you need to know about this candidate. That's not civically well-founded. The second part of this is, here's the positive part of it, is that we can and should embrace, again, I know this is pie in the sky, this is Pollyannish kind of thing. Wouldn't it be wonderful? And yes, I know that there were, what, one or two debates or so. If instead of dumping all of this money, right, the largest money dump ever in American history into a Supreme Court race, right?
Wow.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if indeed, number one, we limited, and it wasn't too extended, but we limited the period of time when in fact we, the candidates, can in fact campaign. We do that in a lot of foreign nations out there. And second, it's the money piece as well, which you also made reference to. That animates not only sometimes the misleading advertising and the misleading campaign, but it turns on, media begins to report on it. Gee, who is higher in terms of revenue? And that becomes a proxy for quality, yeah, right?
Right.
That's outrageous, and we shouldn't be doing that. Wouldn't it be wonderful if, again, in this world that we do not exist in, but you can legislate this, limit the time period, and give each candidate $1 million or put a cap, overall cap on it.
Couldn't agree more.
Right. And then say every 2 weeks or so, we're going to get together for a debate. Don Brown is going to moderate one of them. The League of Women Voters is going to moderate a third one. I'm going to not moderate a second or a fourth one. And we simply just put in the public domain a huge amount of opportunity to see them, to listen to them, have different subject matter, and have them talk about the kind of judges that they are, have them talk about the kind of justices they will be. That's what should happen. It would also do a huge amount to get rid of the other thing you commented about, which is getting rid of the partisan aspect of this.
Yeah.
I'm embracing Donald Trump. I'm embracing Joe Biden. That should have nothing to do with a nonpartisan judicial election. I bemoan the fact that now we are doing that with wild abandon, both sides, candidly, and that also is completely contrary to our traditional way of doing this.
Yeah. And, you know, we have, there are legislated limits in terms of the amount of money local candidates can raise. You know, I believe when I was running for alderman, I think the cap was like $2,000. And I think I only needed to raise, I think it was like less than $1,000 to have an effective campaign. Now, granted, I was running unopposed at the time, but I'd really made a very big impression with especially the signs. And when I was running, the COVID crisis had just, you know, so I couldn't go door to door anymore. So I was really limited to those 50 signs that I raised money for. And in the social media, and those signs are largely very effective in winning campaigns at the local level. And I would think even for national campaigns. And it was like one of my former colleagues in the council who's still there, Daniel Mannion, used to say is that the signs can't physically vote for you, but he'd never heard of a campaign in which somebody won without using lawn signs.
Right. So, and that too, that goes back again to the beginnings of all this, right? And sure, part of it is name recognition. I see Don Brown on a bumper sticker, on a road sign, on a, mm-hmm. a lawn sign. And I like to think that most voters at a minimum go back and say, oh yes, let me take a look at him. Let me pull something up on my phone, on my, mm-hmm. my laptop. Even if they don't, that notion, Don, as you just described, that I'm taking you as the candidate, taking the initiative to raise the money, to get some groundswell support from grassroots sources, and be out there to get my name out there so that I can be a viable candidate. That's the good thing. That's the kind of thing we should, in fact, be embracing.
Absolutely. And you know, now this, I guess, is a good segue for us to jump into local elections. And, you know, I want to congratulate the candidates, both the ones who won and the ones who lost in a valiant effort. They all deserve credit for being a part of our small D democratic process. And first in the 8th district, Alder Beth Moultzen retained her seat for a third term with a margin of 245 votes over challenger small business owner Ken Spencer. In the 11th district, Alder Alicia Halbin-Slabin and council president won a second term over her challenger, Aaron Spencer, by a margin of 240 votes. And before we get to the others, you know, anything over 150 votes in a local election is considered a comfortable margin of victory. Like when you look at the percentages, I believe in those two races, they're well over 50%. But I want to focus on the 14th and 15th district races because they were fueled by partisan, I'm calling it interference, but that may not be fair. Let's call it involvement in what's supposed to be a nonpartisan election. First, in the 14th district, you had incumbent Rick Lemke seeking a third term. And I want to come, you know, I believe in the First Amendment and everyone's right to and express an opinion or support, especially in elections. I just think that partisan involvement in our local elections kind of puts national partisan interest over local community interest and what unites us all as neighbors at the most local levels. So I just believe that candidates should respect this tradition and not utilize or be a beneficiary of partisan support that comes in the form of ugly attacks or partisan platforms. Now, fairness to the candidates who both won, they may not have had control over that. There may have been forces maybe beyond their control, but I think it's something they should speak out about anyway. So in the 15th district, Alderman Rick Lemke defeated challenger Megan Locke by 237 votes. Again, a comfortable margin, but he had the benefit of a WIS-RED postcard campaign, a one-time mailer that positioned him as the conservative candidate. And, you know, I'd argue that if he'd said no to it or had an ability to say no to it, that he still would have won, albeit maybe in a closer race, but he would have won without being beholden to anybody. And WIS-RED has a reputation that if you go against them on one vote, they will crucify you in the next election. And I saw it happen to school board member, good friend Amanda Medina Roddy, and I've seen them a while. I think in this other election we're going to talk about with Corey Payne, but we're nearing the end of this first podcast and Jim's going to stick around for the second, but would you care to comment on this election, what I just talked about here with WIS-RED?
Right. Absolutely. And here's the real problem with it. Yes, absolutely, Don. It is this signal, right, that you're sending that I'm the conservative, I'm the liberal. Right. And the problem with that, of course, is that it substitutes that, which is really an emotional response, right? It's a visceral response. Oh, I am always that. I'm always the other, which is not true of many, many voters. And second, it's viewed as a substitute for what? Let's talk about those aldermanic issues. Let's talk about the council issues and find out how they feel about not only votes that have been in the past, but things that are going to come up in the future. And when you're simply responding to a color, mm-hmm. as opposed to asking somebody about things like law enforcement and about water and about traffic.
Garbage pickup.
The substitution, again, puts our system head over heels. And that's additionally the problem with that kind of an approach.
That sounds great. How are we doing on time there, Mr. Max? Oh, I don't know if he can hear me. So how are we doing on time, Max? 1 minute. Okay, so great. So just a final note on the Rick Lemke campaign too, is that Rick is dyed-in-the-wool conservative, GOP, probably has always voted Republican his whole life. But as an alderman, and I was in kind of that first term with him, He has voted for more government spending for bills, legislation, whatever you want to call it, that tended to be more left-leaning in terms of his support. And so it'd be interesting to see what he does in this third term and what the I would imagine. And we know what the expectations from West Red are, but it'll be interesting to see how Alderman Lemke behaves as a legislator in this next term. And I certainly wish him well, but again, it's kind of a be careful what you wish for. And we're going to talk about that more in the second podcast when we focus on the 15th Aldermanic District that involved a smear campaign from the Democratic Party, Waukesha County. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for podcast number two. Thanks to the mighty Max Martinson for another great job, and to you, the viewers. And please stick around in podcast two with James Santel of Amicus, a law review. Thank you.